Hello and welcome back to True Crime Guys Podcast. I'm your host, Michael, and Andy, I'm glad you could fit me in the schedule this
week. I'm over here. I'm so itchy. I'm so itchy over here.
Itchy? What, did you go to get a tattoo while you was in Florida last week?
No, I'm not in Florida. I had to come back to that. I'm not going to some Florida man for a tattoo.
You don't trust a good Florida man for a tattoo?
No.
You ever seen Miami Ink? How dare you?
I mean, I have, but no, I feel like that would have been a spur of the moment, not getting anything on my actual work done.
Right.
Been like one of those like no see areas. Like, yeah, can you put this on like the back of my knee or something?
Yeah, just so I remember this trip.
Yeah, like the sole of my foot. Maybe it's like the heel is gonna wear off in like a week.
Exactly. So, anyways, guys, if you're wondering, that's why there was no episode last week. Andy had a trip planned, so he's like, go have fun, go have fun in Florida, and we'll take the week off. We hardly ever do that. But we did release a new Sandu episode this week on Natalie Wood, where Andy did one of the best impersonations of Christopher Walken I've heard.
On this show.
On this show this month.
What? Yes.
No, it was great. Truth be told, when we were recording it, I was literally about fucking pissing my pants. I was laughing so damn hard. But in all seriousness, it is about a murder.
In all seriousness.
don't do it.
A murder.
Don't do it, Chris. But anyways, guys, that episode is available wherever you find podcasts, Strange and Unexplained by True Crime Guys, wherever you listen, as well as on Patreon, where we added a little treat to this week's episode. We released it a little bit early, and I put in a few outtakes from Andy's original recording, which I thought would make you guys chuckle. So again, that's patreon.com/truecrimeguys, where you can always get the extended ad-free versions with outtakes.
Mm-hmm. And early.
That's right. But as far as the free platform, we have tons of content out there for you guys. You can check out full episodes and shorts on YouTube. Just check out True Crime Guys and make sure you subscribe and give us a follow on social media. But this week, we are going way, way back, Andy.
Oh, we are going all the way back.
All the way back to the 1800s, 1849, Bermondsey, London. I think I'm saying that right. Bermondsey,
right? Yes, it's a Bermondsey.
Bermondsey, London.
You gotta say it like you don't even want syllables.
I don't even want to say it. Bermondsey. Like you don't even part your lips.
Like I don't want extra syllables in this word.
Right. But way back in 1849, Bermondsey, London, a Swiss-French woman named Maria Manning and her husband Frederick murdered her wealthy lover, Patrick O'Connor. They robbed him, and then they hid his body under the kitchen floor. Oh, then Maria double-crosses her husband and dips with the money. Well, kinda. It's a crazy love triangle that basically went bad at every corner, Andy. You see what I did there? It's a triangle joke.
Yeah, it's a very lopsided triangle.
Yeah, it's a weird-shaped triangle, but a triangle nonetheless.
It's like one of those geometry problems you just hated seeing in homework. It's like, I don't want to solve these angles.
It's a tad obtuse.
It's so... What even is that? That's so acute.
All right, roll the intro.
Hell of a time for murder. But the devil never plays fair. Bermondsey, London, number 3, Nineveh Square. Mr. and Mrs. Manning, two halves of an evil smile. Murdered old Connor in cold blood, a rich man from Marin's Isle. We took the train from London down to Edinburgh town. Set herself up in a hotel just till the heat died down. She was back in London before she could rest her head. Brought back home to pay the price for a man she shot. The head. No, Fred, he skipped out too, hopped a boat to the Jersey Isle. And he tried his best to hide from justice, and it worked for a little while. Till he was caught drowning his sorrows in some old smoky bar. Said, fellas, did you get her? They said, yeah, she didn't get that far. They stood together on trial, as they were told the day they'd die. Lord, have mercy on your souls, all the people cried. Warning to both young and old, never trade a life for gold. There's better things in this life to hold. Oh, never trade a life for gold. Oh, never trade a life for gold. Oh, never trade a life for gold.
All right. So, even though this is a murder by a couple, there's really a leader in this couple, Andy, and it was Marie. Mm-hmm. Okay? Marie Manning. So she's the important one, so we're going to start with her. Marie Manning was born Marie Desroches. I think I said that right. Did I say that right?
Marie Desroches?
Yeah. Desroches.
It's a soft X.
Yeah. But it's was in Switzerland, though. So wait. Now, I don't know why I pronounced it French, but I think she was of French descent.
Oh, yeah.
She was born in Switzerland.
That's definitely a French name. That's like faux. It's like a soft X.
Yeah. There you go. But she was born in Switzerland in 1821. And later, after the death of her parents, when she was just a teenager, she moved to England and started working in like one of the most just established, wealthy homes of all of London. And it was called the Stafford House.
Of the great Matt Stafford, the Matt Stafford
of
fame.
No, I think that's in Detroit.
Ah, yes,
yes.
It's more of a motorhome.
I see how you got that confused. Yeah. No, I don't think they're of the same lineage. I'd be curious to know though. But it was here, working at the Stafford House, that she developed a taste for the finer things in life, and decided that she would never return to the poor ways in which she grew up. And she had a lot going for her, Andy. She was charismatic. She was a good-looking woman with a magnetic personality and dark features and curves that attracted more than a few admirers.
She very much seems like one of those like college girls who mm-hmm. gets like a trip to Dubai like one time and then is like, this is my life now.
This is the life I want.
This is the life I'm supposed to have.
That's right.
Like I deserve this life.
And to be fair, pretty girls can do that. They can do that.
If I could, I would.
If they want, they can do that. And in 1846, Marie was sailing to France, where she met Patrick O'Connor. She was sailing with her employers of the Stafford House. That's mm-hmm. how she was even afforded to take this trip.
Yeah, she was like a housemaid, like a house right. or a house servant.
Exactly. And on this trip, she met Patrick O'Connor. He was a 50-year-old Irishman. O'Connor was charming and was sitting on a considerable fortune in the railway industry, and he was also a bit of a loan shark.
Mm-hmm.
He was a money lender. But his specialty was extremely high interest rates.
I love how he divulged all this information to her, too, on like a relatively short boat ride.
No, he didn't divulge all of that. Well, I'm telling you guys some insider knowledge.
I'm sure there was a little bit of like, oh, so I mean, you know, I am sitting on a pretty large, substantial railway fortune.
He definitely told her
inclined
that.
Inclined to fancy that.
Yeah. And he actually promised Marie that he would take her out for a meal when he returned to London. When? Not if.
Oh, when? I'm coming back.
Oh, he coming back.
Yeah.
He coming back.
And nothing on this boat is edible. So let's just, let's wait till we get to shore.
Exactly.
This is a ferry in 1887. This is
right. But, I mean, this is a very wealthy ferry. Just the fact that O'Connor's on it, the fact that the Stafford House family and employees are on this boat, like this is, you know.
Yes.
It's probably like a small Titanic.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
We've seen what happens to those.
Well, it's small enough to miss the iceberg. It's
small enough to not go all the way down there either.
But in early 1847, O'Connor made good on his promise. But he was a little bit late, because by this time, Marie had already sparked up a relationship with another man. His name was Frederick Manning. with a name like that, I mean, hell of a man, right? I mean, his last name is fucking Manning.
I mean, look at that lineage right there. Right? Super Bowl champions, two of them.
They're just like Manning.
Manning's right
Wait,
there.
Manning and Stafford? What is going on?
This family is long standing.
Apparently. But Manning was only 2 years older than her, and he was a London native. And though his job at the railway company wasn't, you know, a great paying position, he claimed that he was going to inherit a fortune from his mother.
Oh, so, my God.
Right? So he had everything else on O'Connor, right? Like, he's younger, he's better looking, he's, you know, he's closer to her age, way mm-hmm. closer. But
he's also a native, yeah.
He's a native, London, right? But he wasn't rich. So he was like, just tell her I'm going to be.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, you know, whenever my mom dies, right. like, I'm gonna like this like sweet like condo,
right.
like
and you know the disillusion like every 18-year-old exactly. is under. It's like by the time she figures it out, I actually will be rich, probably.
Yeah, so, like, but like you know, by the time I get bored with her, or like, okay, this guy sounds like a Tinder swindler.
Exactly,
it took a year after she got off this boat, and she was like, I found this new guy. He has a good job. When his mom dies, he's gonna get like all this money. I mean, like he lives in her basement right now, but like. You know, once she's gone, he gets the condo.
Yep. So both men actually proposed marriage to Marie. So she kind of had to decide, do I want this older gentleman with this luxurious life, or do I go with the younger guy? Because Manning was also, even though he was closer to her age, he was also more easily, how do you put, dominated or controlled.
Manipulated.
Yes. There we go. And also, of course, he claimed he was going to give her a comfortable lifestyle in the future. So, you know, and if that doesn't pay out, fuck him. I'll leave him, right?
Yeah.
But for now, Frederick it is. Frederick Manning. And she married Frederick Manning in May of 1847. And after a few unsuccessful pub ownership attempts, the couple eventually settled into a relatively nice home in Miniver Place in Bermondsey, which is in southeast London. But it soon became clear that Fred had been lying about his inheritance, Andy. Red flag right here.
His okay. mom comes to visit and she's just dirt poor.
She comes to borrow money from them.
She comes to say, all right, we're going to go. My mom's coming to visit.
Right. Because they actually had a decent home. You know, I mean, of course, Marie wasn't going to live in any squalor. Like, don't get it twisted.
Oh,
you
no.
You know what I'm saying? Like, she's at least going to be upper middle class.
She's going to have a fridge.
Exactly. Now, fearing, though, that she had married the wrong man, Marie called up her not-so-old fling, O'Connor, and basically picked up where she left off with him. Although, I wouldn't call it having an affair, necessarily, because it seems as if Frederick was completely aware of it and was known to have a few mistresses of his own. But O'Connor would even occasionally come to dinner at the Manning's house with the both of them.
I wonder,
was a normal thing.
I wondered about this, if it was more of like a convenient marriage or if they both were just kind of like, yeah, you do you, I do me, and we'll work together on this. Because like they had a weird relationship for their short time as a married couple.
Yeah. I mean, to have an open relationship in the 1800s is weird in itself. It almost makes me think that maybe they were looking for a victim this whole time.
Yeah,
both
could
of
be.
Them.
They're looking
whether he finds a rich woman suitor or she finds a rich man, either way. And then she finally was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm calling Patrick.
Yeah.
Maybe she didn't want to pull this scheme on Patrick because she still had feelings for him.
Possibly.
Now, this love triangle continued for some time, actually 2 years. Like I said, they pulled this charade for a while. But by the summer of 1849, Marie and Frederick decided that it was them and not him. And devised a plan to break it off with O'Connor. Okay? So, let's unveil the plot. It's not very complicated.
I feel like this was not going to be like an easy letdown. There's not going to be like a ghosting in this.
No.
Yeah. I mean, there's going to be a ghost, but not a ghosting.
No, not a ghosting. No. The Mannings had a really simple plan, really. They would invite O'Connor to dinner at their house, make him feel comfortable, as they had, you know, many times before, and then just, you know, shoot him in the head. There you go.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, easy peasy, and then just bury his body in the kitchen.
Now, is it like...
Because that's where he's dead, so that makes sense.
Is this like after the hors d'oeuvres, or is this like after dinner, before dessert?
Probably before dinner. We don't want to waste food on somebody. You're going to kill them.
I mean, you want to give them a
You want to break bread with somebody and then shoot them in the
head? You want to at least give them a nice meal.
I guess, Andy.
Your last meal, you know what I'm saying. Yeah. Like this really good, man, this is delicious. Why'd you cook so well?
Right. And then just the whole time they're just complimenting the shit out of you. Just the whole time, just being the best they've ever been.
Yeah, exactly.
Just like, I don't mind.
God damn it.
But their plan was after they shoot him that they would then bury his body under the kitchen floor and cover it with a little lime. And that's pretty much it. They knew that lime speeds up the decay of the corpse, even in the 1800s.
Oh, I mean, they had a lot of bodies around back in the 1800s, just kind of piling up. They had to quickly figure out ways to make these bodies not stink and get rid of them quick.
Yeah, yeah.
What was this around this time? It was like 14,000 people just like dying of like sickness and stuff in England.
Oh my God, it was a terrible time.
And Jack the Ripper is running around. You just got bodies and blood and pieces all over the place. You got to figure out a way to get these bodies not stink.
Their drinking water is running into their sewer. Like it's
those are basically the same thing. That's the same thing.
That was the same thing at this time.
The river, River Thames was the both. It was shit in the river, and then you just kind of went upstream a little bit, hopefully to not get somebody else's shit.
Jesus Christ. Everyone's moving up North River. Everybody's just crowding up north side of town. So the plan was set to go on the 8th of August, 1849. But the Mannings were thrown a curveball when old O'Connor brought a friend to dinner, Pierce Walsh. Apparently, O'Connor couldn't shake this guy. I guess they were hanging out together today, and this guy's just lonely. I don't fucking know.
Just one of those friends you just can't get.
I watched this one documentary, and he's like, the way they portrayed the situation is O'Connor's like leaning over to Marie, and he's like, I just couldn't get rid of him.
I just fucking won't go away.
Bless his soul.
He's just fucking loser. He won't fucking go away.
I'm afraid if I shoot him off, he'll off himself tonight. It's going to be on me.
Like I said, I saw that the whole time. That guy's just like standing off to the side, just like, hey, we got to have Sherry. Just like the most annoying friend just standing. Like, dude, I'm trying to get with my fucking side piece over here. Why'd you come over here?
Shut the hell up, Pierce.
Shut up, Pierce.
But at the end of the evening, Marie invited him back for dinner the following night, right? For a redo. But this time, she made sure to ask him to come alone so that they could have some intimate time. If you know what I mean, Andy.
Please don't bring your friend. I will let you do whatever you want if you do not bring Pierce again.
I swear to God.
He ruined this entire evening. He stood in the corner. He hugged the drapes. He did not like anything we cooked. He asked for noodles. What?
Noodles? What are those?
Buttered noodles? What?
What the? Where is he from? Oh, my God. But anyways, with the offer of guaranteed sex, O'Connor quickly agreed. So, the evening of August 9th now, the next day. Okay? Take two. O'Connor arrived back at the Manning home on Miniver Place. And the couple wasted no time this time. The flagstone floor in the kitchen had already been removed, and the soil beneath had been dug up. And when O'Connor walked into the kitchen and obviously noticed a giant hole in the middle of the floor, he was like, what gives? What's with the hole? And of course, they were like, oh, we're making plumbing repairs.
We decided not to shit in the river anymore. We're just going to make a hole in the house, right here, the floor, and we're going to cover it, and we're going to shit in this hole.
We thought, you know how you have your toilet that goes to a septic tank? What if you just shit right in the tank?
What if you just shit right in the tank?
Bypass the toilet. Save some water.
I can't imagine the fact that like the previous night that they invited him over basically to kill him that night, but they invited him over for dinner. So you would think that, like, kind of like you said, like, they weren't really going to waste food, so they're probably just going to invite him over and shoot him.
Yeah.
So then he comes over, and he brings his fucking friend, and now they're probably sitting there like, shit, now we actually have to cook. God damn it. Now we have to cook for four. God damn it, Pierce. And now there's, like, throwing together some quick-ass meal.
Right.
Just like a frozen ham.
Hastily chopping up vegetables.
Just a loaf of bread on the It's like, God damn it, we weren't actually going to... The next night's like, no, come back. We will, I promise, we'll do it better tomorrow night. We'll really be prepared for dinner tomorrow night.
Oh, I didn't even know you weren't prepared. The cheese toast was amazing.
the cheese bread.
It's not even toasted.
It's just a piece of cheese and some bread.
Oh my God. Okay. Quit making me laugh so much. This is the serious part, Andy.
Okay.
This is the serious part of the story. Now, as Patrick O'Connor entered the kitchen, Marie asked him to please wash his hands. Like, what are you, an animal?
I mean, please,
go wash your hands.
Step over the giant hole in our shit floor and wash your hands.
Over there. So as he did, Marie followed him over to the sink and stood behind him with a revolver in one hand, and her other hand, she placed it on his shoulder and then held the gun to the back of his head and shot him. You know, he immediately fell to the kitchen floor. And Marie immediately ran to Frederick, and she was actually, like, ecstatic, at least according to Frederick. Like, she was, like, giddy.
Yeah.
And she said, "Thank God. I've made him good at last. It never will be found out. As we are on such exceedingly good terms, no one will ever have the least suspicion of my murdering him." End quote.
I do know that that is from Frederick, and it's almost like he is saying it a bit too clearly. He's like, she came to me and very eloquently said, "No one will ever suspect me murdering him."
But that is how they spoke in 1800s. I mean, London. Right?
I mean, yeah, I'm sure some people did. Yes, I'm sure a lot of them did. I'm sure some people,
especially
just said,
you know, a lady who thinks that she's upper class. At least
true, but I feel like even she's Frederick bougie. Like recanting this story. I feel like he couldn't even, like, this man does not speak like that. I feel like Frederick is just like,
it was probably more slurred.
Yeah,
he was an alcoholic.
No one's ever going to suspect me murdering him, my will, or however my wife says it.
You get the point. She's evil, she is.
You know, she shot him right in the back of the head, she did.
But the problem with the story, and Frederick's story as well, is that he went on to say that the one bullet did not kill him, Andy. And O'Connor was laying in the floor, basically crying in agony, as Marie and Frederick basically just looked at each other, horrified. And not knowing what else to do, Frederick grabbed an iron pry bar and bludgeoned O'Connor to death. Then the couple buried the body in soil and quicklime, put the flagstone floor back, even the grout and everything, you know, like they fresh put it back, but then they cleaned it a little too good. They ended up giving some shit away later. And then they just sat and drank whiskey together in silence.
That's a shitty 1847 revolver right there. Like, just shooting somebody in the back of the head, and then just
the documentary
being like,
shows it as like a derringer, like a small derringer.
I mean,
you know,
either way, for the fact for you to be within like arm's length of somebody with a weapon, with a gun, and shoot them in the back of the head, and for them to like fall on the ground and like be screaming.
Yeah, apparently the bullet did not pierce his skull somehow.
Yeah, it's a very shitty old ass weapon that just like. Just like spit the bullet out at him, apparently.
Well, apparently the issue was that she did not have enough gunpowder packed in the ammunition. Yeah,
exactly. Absolutely. Like, she just like spit a bullet at him, basically, just really hard.
Yeah.
And he's just laying on the ground like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it basically just knocked him out. And he was probably like having a seizure and shit, you know? But Fred decided to finish him off. Now, the morning after the murder, just as planned, Marie went to O'Connor's house and collected his railway share certificates and any other valuables that she could find or that she knew of. Now, the couple was blinded by the wealth that they had just stumbled into. Not to mention, they were not exactly seasoned criminals. And by this point, they were in way over their heads.
I feel like we just covered some of those people recently in our mastermind case.
We did.
Look at all this money we got. We probably shouldn't spend it for
you
like...
You go that way and I'll go this way. And they'll never catch us.
And we won't spend any of it for like 2 years, right? Did I say years?
I
meant weeks.
I meant hours. Jesus. Yeah, just 3 days after the murder, a group of Patrick O'Connor's work colleagues visited the Manning home in search of him. And they explained to Marie, who was home by herself, that O'Connor told them that he was visiting her for dinner on the night that he disappeared. So Marie, she remained calm and said that he just never shown up for dinner that night. And while it satisfied the men for now, she knew it wouldn't be long before they returned.
I feel like all of these bros just showed up. It's like, yeah, O'Connor said he was coming here. He said he was about to tag this married lady all night. You her?
Right.
So we weren't actually expecting you, but You her. I don't know why all these people end up with this accent.
Is he still here? Just some douche from the Bronx.
I like to this accent.
But Fred and Marie were constantly growing more terrified of another knock at the door. And they were growing more suspicious of each other at the same time. And as the paranoia began to set in, it was only a matter of time before the murderous lovers would turn on one another. And it was Marie who bolted first, fleeing on her own to Scotland with the bulk of their ill-gotten wealth, and realizing that he'd just been left holding the bag, Frederick sold all of the furniture in their home and left for Jersey with the earnings from that and what little Marie had left him.
We should specify that's old Jersey. That's
that's old Jersey.
That's not New Jersey. No. But see, the accent fits. See, he's still with the Jersey. Look at this guy. Hey. He knows where he's going.
Okay, you can use a Jersey accent.
But that's got to be a moment of pure panic when Frederick just comes home one day and everything's gone. He's like, shit, sell everything, we gotta go. Just packing up shit, just throwing. Like, I gotta pawn this chair, I gotta pawn this couch, I gotta pawn that toaster.
Yeah, apparently she left him a little bit of what she got from Patrick O'Connor's, because he was found with, you know, the railway
certificates, the bonds, grants, or whatever. Yeah,
or whatever. He was found with a couple of those.
Yeah, like a little hush money. Like, hey, if I just leave you something, will you not, like, rat me out? Like, right. You know, but I'm going to go.
Well, you know, a lot of people speculate that she came home that night after robbing his house and found him drunk or passed out and was like, you know what? Fuck you. And I'm going to take the majority of this. And that's how she left without him knowing.
Yeah.
Because how the hell? It's not like he was watching TV too loud and she snuck out the door or some shit.
Right? Yeah, I thought he had to be like at work or something. Like, he was at work right? One day, or she's like, yeah, how'd she sneak out? But either way, it's just like coming home like, you stupid fat piece of shit. How drunk are you? It's been 2 days.
Yeah, and she was just like, here, out of pity, left him, you know.
Something nice, Stevie. Right?
Exactly. Now, in the meantime, Patrick O'Connor's friends had reported him missing to the Infant Metropolitan Police, which had only been formed for 20 years. They'd only been formed 20 years before this, actually. Oh, yeah. Like, the police had had a hard run.
This was barely teenage fucking police.
Seriously. Now, but they did a hell of a job on this case, though, in particular. These officers, the credit where it's due, they did a hell of a job. Now, when officers arrived at the Manning home, they received no answer at the door, obviously. So, suspicious, they broke in.
I mean, yeah.
You know, they broke in. They're cops. Who's going to stop us?
In 1847. Fucking, yeah. It's just like, knock, knock. Just immediately punched in the
door. Okay, bring in the log. But they broke in and obviously found it abandoned of furniture and everything. But
like a foreclosure.
But they also noticed some really shiny, loose pieces of flagstone in the middle of the kitchen floor, Andy. Just seemed odd.
You know? A trap door or something? What is this?
And I'm sure it was probably one of the easiest searches that the new police had ever conducted. They basically kicked the flagstone aside, and sure enough, there was the battered body of Patrick O'Connor. The missing person's investigation was now a murder.
I bet these young cops are like, I bet they're all going to be this easy.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Meanwhile, Jack the Ripper's across town.
The Jack the Ripper.
Just disembodying a prostitute.
The detective on the Jack the Ripper case is standing in the corner smoking.
Yeah, if only. You boys ain't seen shit. That body still got its liver. At least you got a fucking clue.
Oh my God. And but police, they also quickly learned where Marie was headed. Because they found that she bought 2 first-class tickets to Edinburgh.
Edinburgh. Ooh, that's right. King's Cross Station had those fancy tickets, too.
She's
traveling in style.
Of course, man. She's Marie Manning. How dare you?
How dare she?
She only travels in style.
How should I even question?
So, now that the Metropolitan Police knew where she was going, they used another new invention at the time, the telegraph.
Beep, 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 beep,
that's
beep,
right.
Beep, beep, beep.
And they contacted their counterparts in the Scottish capital, and Marie was arrested in a hotel where she was staying under a false name, an extravagant hotel, by the way, too.
Did Scotland already have their police force at this time? I wonder if they're like Scottish counterparts. So like, how if like the English police force are like 20 years old? Like, I wonder what the Scottish police force was at this time right now. That was probably brutal.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Just a bunch of bearded men in kilts just kicking your door in, being like, where the fuck were you?
Get on the fucking ground.
Tie his hands. Tie his hands.
I'm going to beat you with a fucking bagpipe.
All right. But it was the telegraph that also led to Frederick's capture after he was spotted on a boat bound for Jersey by a former acquaintance who had read about the murder in the newspapers, which it had already been dubbed the Bermondsey Horror, which is probably the most popular name for it. If you're looking for it on YouTube, looking for other videos, documentaries, type in Bermondsey Horror. Am I saying that right again? Am I saying it right?
Bermondsey, yeah.
Bermondsey.
Bermondsey. Bermondsey, not Bermondsey. Bermondsey sounds like an Australian
Bermondsey
town.
Horror. It's like every time I look away from it for a while, I forget how to say it. Bermondsey. Nope. I did it wrong again. Anyways.
I wonder how Frederick was spotted on that boat so easily. Just like traveling to Jersey, trying to blend in, wearing a new tracksuit.
Probably like a brand new like pinstripe suit or whatever.
It's velour.
Fucking cigar feather in his hat.
Well, I'm just trying to blend in with the local crowd. You know what I'm talking about.
Drinking
what
are scotch on the deck of the fucking boat. With a fucking Cuban cigar. But this information was telegraphed to police in London, who arranged for Frederick's arrest and transfer right back to the old city. And he was asleep in bed nursing a hangover when authorities burst into his room. And in his groggy state, he admitted that he killed O'Connor because, yeah, he didn't like him. And he also later stated that he moaned, and I never liked him very much, and I battered his skull in with a ripping chisel, which is basically a crowbar.
Yeah. I mean, back at that time, that was grounds for murder a lot of times. Yeah, I didn't like him.
Pretty much.
Oh, shit. Well, I mean, that is good defense. Oh, shit.
Yeah, pretty good.
Back at that time, it's like, oh, well, yeah, I mean, yeah. Shit.
Oh, shit, I've hated a bloke or two.
But by the 23rd of August, both Marie and Frederick were reunited, Andy. Back in matrimony. Oh, no, wait. It's not matrimony. It's prison, actually. They're reunited in prison.
Conjugal.
Yeah. And their trial began on the 25th of October. They're not fucking around.
Probably not in prison.
They are not fucking around.
This was like Soviet Union times back in. Like,
I mean, yeah, seriously. And at this time, trials were usually quick affairs, right? It's pretty much, what did he do? Hang him.
Yeah. Who said it? Who saw it? You saw it? You swear?
You swear?
Cool.
You swear on the Bible? Cool.
Can you read? No, that book. It's a Bible. That's fine. That's fine.
Close enough. But yeah, usually the trials were over in like an hour or two, but the Manning trial took a full 2 days to set up and finally be finished.
Oh, the marathon.
2 days. Whoa, this is unheard of.
Dude, you can't even get somebody processed into county in 2 days now.
Well, this may be because there were debates about selecting men from Swiss and French backgrounds to sit on the jury. Because of Marie's Swiss-French roots, I guess. They wanted to make sure that she got a fair trial.
I mean, I feel like at this point they already kind of had their verdict, so I feel like they were just wanting to say, like, what accent do you guys want to say it in? You want to hear it in an English accent? Swiss accent? I mean, we all know what we're going to say, right? Who wants to say it? Who wants to say it?
Yeah, they were fucked. The verdict was never really in any doubt. And Marie screamed profanities about the English race as she was led away from the dock. She was also quoted as saying, "You have treated me like a wild beast of the forest."
Ah, so eloquent.
You English animals.
You barbarians. How dare you treat me like this? I am an esteemed woman of the... Get your hands off.
Get your hands. But on the morning of November 13th, Frederick and Marie were brought to a chapel together to receive blessings before they were executed. Marie appeared stoic that morning, though. Resigned to her fate and more concerned with her looking her best than, you know, about to be dead.
Yeah, I can imagine her being that fucking, like, in the fucking, like, the little carriage and they're taking them there. She's like, can I please get a mirror? Can someone please, like, I feel like my hair is not sitting properly.
And then,
can someone please just up comb? Please a comb.
And then the ironic thing is, she asked to be blindfolded. Now, some sources will say that she wore a black veil over her entire face and had to be, either way, she did have to be led up the steps to the gallows.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, her face was covered anyways, in one way or another.
Still wants to look her best.
Yeah, I guess so.
Wants to meet Jesus looking pretty.
Right.
Wishing sweet talk him when she gets there.
That's right. Who knows?
You have any railway bonds?
Never heard of a
What's your inheritance looking like, Jesus?
Right.
So is all this yours when your dad died, when your dad leaves?
These streets, these 24 karat?
Are these real pearl gates?
Right. So yeah, as Marie was keeping her cool, Frederick was a little more emotional. Basically trembling as they led him up the walk to the chapel, to the rooftop, before he finally collapsed when they reached the gallows. Now, as they stood up there, Marie leant over to her husband and gave him a brief kiss. This may have been out of love for each other, or perhaps Marie was attempting to show that she was not the cold, money-obsessed woman that she'd been portrayed as in the press. Probably the latter.
Yeah, I said she was very obsessed with her image all the way up to the very end.
Yeah. However, the kiss really didn't impress much of the 30,000 people who were in attendance, dude.
Fucking Super Bowl prick crowd right here.
Seriously. Now, and they were loud, and they were disrespectful throughout the proceedings. Now, that's putting it lightly. So much so, in fact, that the unruly gathering convinced author Charles Dickens, who was in the crowd, to campaign vigorously for a ban on public executions. He actually helped get them ended. But his quote was, "The conduct of the people was so indescribably frightful that I felt for some time afterwards almost as if I were living in a city of devils." End quote.
I mean, around this time, yeah, not far off, like a suburb.
Yeah.
Like a yeah. Like a village, but yeah.
This was a rough time for London. Absolutely. Yeah. There were animals running in the streets, man. It was crazy.
I feel like I just imagine like Charles Dickens and that crowd just being like, "This is just horseshit."
Yeah.
Absolute horseshit.
And old Dickens would get his wish though, Andy, and the executions would be banned in 1868. And another interesting consequence of the execution was that of satin dresses, which Marie had worn when she died. They promptly went out of fashion.
Ah, now it was seen as like a death gown.
Yeah, probably.
Or like a murder gown.
Yeah, that just goes to show like how many people were there. Like I said, 30,000 people. They watched as the couple had nooses placed around their necks. And just a few seconds later, the executioner pulled the lever and the couple plunged to their deaths. Also, in an ironic twist, the Mannings' bodies were buried with quicklime, of course, you know, right after.
Like I said, they had a process at this time.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess like they were just so used to the dead.
Oh, yeah.
Because so many people were dying of disease.
They probably had wagons just backed up under the gallows. As soon as their bodies stopped twitching, cut the ropes, into the wagon, take them to the hole, throw them in, put the lime over them. All right, we're done for the day. Yeah. We got three more.
Yeah, you're right. It probably was such a normal occurrence that they were that comfortable with death.
Oh yeah, death was not a, like, it was just an everyday thing of like, yeah, people could just drop dead at any point.
Yeah.
It's not a long lifespan at this point.
Yeah, they were getting infections, man. Infections and illness mostly.
You're drinking shit water!
Yeah.
Constantly!
And then also, you know, you had, you know, this is, like I said, 20 years into the established police force. 20 years, and it's still this type of hell there. 20 years earlier, when the police force was first established, it was just as bad, if not worse, when the townspeople didn't even want a police force in the 1870s. And so they would be attacking these policemen like and treating them like absolute criminals, like tying them up to horses, ripping them apart, fucking stoning them in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
Like nobody wanted to be a cop. And somehow they established that shit.
Yeah, man, those people, the early citizens looked at it as like military occupation.
Yeah, for
they
sure.
They were like, oh, is this like the fucking army's coming in and telling us what to do? No, we're in a military state. Like, no, like, yeah, but no.
Yeah.
It was not an easy time being a copper back in the day, in the early times of this force.
No, absolutely not, man. So this is one of the few cases, man, where I really feel for the police and also damn good job.
I mean, yeah. I mean,
damn good job, honestly. Like,
for real, to figure out where she went, to find her tickets, to get the receipt, to know which boat she was on, to be able to contact a brand new police force across the pond.
Yeah, and to effectively use the telegraph in a timely manner to where it actually worked when it had just come out. Like that was in the forefront of their minds, I'm sure, but still.
Yeah.
And
think about how like difficult jurisdictions are like in America at the time. Like even like in the 1950s and 1970s when like a fucking criminal would go to a different state and like the cops would be like, "Don't talk to Nevada. No. This is a New Mexico case. Don't talk to them. We'll solve this.
Oh my God, yeah.
But like immediately over there, it's like, shit, she's going to Scotland. Fucking call them.
Like, yeah.
Get them ready.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, a crime like this, though, I feel like you're not going to have any problem getting other areas and other police forces to help you. You know, like even today. I mean, true. I feel like, oh my God, a brutal murder like this.
And he is a wealthier individual at the time. He's, like I said, he's got money. Facts. He's got connections. He has friends who are like wealthy friends who are looking for him immediately. So the cops actually care. Yep. This isn't just another dead body in the street or another mugging or something like that. This was like this is a wealthy citizen whose bonds were stolen and all his railway certificates. And
yeah,
we must actually catch this criminal.
Right, right. I just, do you think it went down the way it did? You know, because the main accepted series of events is by Frederick, you know, because Marie is just straight out lies. She just says she wasn't even there. And that's absurd.
Yeah.
That's absurd. You were there. But as far as the way it went down, I think it does make a lot of sense that's the way it went down.
Oh, I absolutely think it went down that way. I think either the fact that she shot him, like, and he, either Frederick was there the whole time and watched her shoot him, or if she shot him and she ran in and was just like kind of panicking and he had to go in there like, fuck, and just kind of finish it off. Like,
yeah.
Because after that happened, I feel like I said that paranoia that they were sitting in, I feel like it wasn't like a, ooh, this went exactly according to plan. Like, I feel like there was a little bit of like, shit.
You know,
do we stay? Do we go? Like,
right.
Do you go? Do like,
yeah. I mean, obviously they planned it, right? They pre-dug the hole and everything. It's just odd that they chose to kill him at their house when she had free range of his house.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems odd to me.
Yeah, you could have made it look like you could have made it look like a breaking and entering. You could have
or
made
an
it
accident.
You could have just made it look like someone broke in and murdered him and ransacked the place.
Yeah.
And left the body right there and just disappeared. But right. Like, to bring him to your house, bury him in your house, it's like, I get that you put the lime there to dissolve the body and cover the smell, but like, if anybody finds that body or any traces, it's immediately traced back to you. It's in your house. Like, it's not like a fingerprint was found in his home where you frequently are there.
Exactly.
So, to have the body in your house is, I don't know, it's like they planned enough of it, but it's almost like it seems like their plan was to get the hell out of there. Like,
definitely.
You wouldn't want to live there with that and have that constant, like, fear of his friends coming back and people looking for him or anybody tracing him back to you.
Or just having a body under your kitchen, man. That might not be a
good some
way
Edgar Allan Poe shit. You don't want that. You don't want some, you know, telltale heart all the time, beating and shit.
No. But, you know, when I think about the story as a whole, it's kind of romantic a little bit. That the husband and wife, like, they both were just, it's like they were equally greedy. You know what I mean? Like, if the husband would have just gave up alcohol and been, you know, better with money, maybe managed those, because they did own a few bars together. They owned a couple bars together, and they were great opportunities, and they even had investors and everything, and he just kind of squandered it.
Yeah.
You know, because of, you know, his own greed or wanting to drink or whatever, and then she had this lifestyle in mind that she had to live. And it was almost like, well, if we can't have it, we're going to take it from somebody. And if we can't take it from somebody, I guess we'll die.
Yeah.
And then they died together, you know?
To an extent. I feel like there's a little bit of that. And it's also, I feel like she had a little bit of resentful.
Like a folk song in there somewhere, man.
I feel like she was a bit resentful of him, too, when she found out that he was lying about that inheritance and that he was not actually going to be, like, easily set up for a very successful future, that there actually was going to be work involved. I don't think she ever wanted to work. But the fact that they owned bars, that they had businesses and stuff, that wasn't, like, old money. She wanted to be old money. Like,
right.
But she didn't understand that that's not something you can just acquire. She thought she could just like shack up with somebody or kill somebody and that she could like just like kind of wander into this life like that she could just then have for the rest of her life.
Right.
But she didn't realize that like, no, you can't just, you don't acquire a fortune. You don't acquire wealth like overnight.
Right.
So yeah, there was nothing. As soon as she found out that this guy was not going to just like give her an easy work-free, you know, drama-free life, I feel like there was a bit of resentment like towards him a little bit. So she's kind of like either you find a way to give me this life or I'm going to go get it somewhere else.
Right.
So maybe there was a bit of that, like, you know, you told me that we were going to have this and now we don't. So either we figure out a way to get that or I'm going to leave and go, I'm just going to go with Connor, like O'Connor.
Right.
So it could have been a little bit of that.
Well, like, apparently that wasn't an option because she could have done that at any given time.
True. That's what I'm saying. But like, I feel like there's, if Frederick is as easy to manipulate as she says he was, or as he kind of was, it could have been a little bit of that. It's like, either you give me this life or I'm going to go, I'm just going to leave you and I'm going to go with O'Connor, or we can take him out of the picture and we can just take his stuff and we can leave together.
Right.
So then, but when, as soon as he's taken out of the picture, she probably looks at him like, never mind. I actually don't want to be with you.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like there's a little bit of that in there, but.
Yeah. Well, they only had themselves to blame, honestly. And I think they both realized that, especially her at the end. They really did. Yep. The Bermondsey horror. Bermondsey?
Bermondsey, yes.
Bermondsey. Also, there, Dickens wasn't the only novelist to write about the Bermondsey horror. Novelist Herman Melville was also present at the execution and wrote this about it in his diary. It says, quote, "Policed by the hundreds, men and women fainting. The man and wife were hung side by side, still unreconciled to each other. What a change from the time they stood up to be married together. The mob was brutish. All in all, a most wonderful, horrible, and unspeakable scene."
So Victorian.
It is. Wonderful and horrible and unspeakable, Andy.
Sounds like, actually, that sounds like a fucking H.P. Lovecraft line.
It really does.
Wonderful, horrible, unspeakable scenes.
Well, you take out horrible and you got Oh My Gaia, man.
Oh, right.
Because it is wonderful.
It is wonderful.
And it's very speakable as well. I'm speaking about it right now.
Is it unspeakable, Michael? No. Are you going to cut this whole promo out?
It's just unspeakable how good it is.
It's unspeakable and cut.
Maybe that's not the right adjective. But it is wonderful. Oh My Gaia is an innovative, all-natural deodorant, fragrance, and beard oil company specializing in paraben and aluminum-free products. Their innovative line of deodorants inhibit the growth of odor-causing bacteria while still maintaining effectiveness. And there is tons of scents to choose from, guys, from vanilla, cherry almond, sandalwood, lavender, lemongrass, Egyptian musk, coconut, dreamsicle, leather, lumberjack, honeysuckle, fireside, bergamot, amber, pear, sweet pea, sailor, barbershop. And we have our very own scent called True Crime Pine. Also, there is a new scent that was just added. I saw it on social media. It's called Aloha. That's actually my wife's favorite deodorant. She's been wearing that since it was a prototype. She has Aloha jars that have a little piece of tape on the top where Wendy wrote Aloha.
That's right. Scent.
That's how you know you're exclusive in the Oh My Gaia community. But guys, please give that a chance. Give Oh My Gaia a chance if you're looking for the all natural deodorant solution at ohmygaia.com, OHMYGAIA.com, or at shop_ohmygaia on Instagram. And because you guys are True Crime Guys listeners, you can use the code word creeper for 15% off. Creeper, CREEPER, 15% off your order, people. Again, that's ohmygaia.com or at shop_ohmygaia on Instagram. And of course, there's links to Oh My Gaia and everything True Crime Guys right below the description of this episode, including Patreon, patreon.com/truecrimeguys. You know it, Andy.
Oh, I know it. I've been there for a long time.
That's right. That's where you can get access to all of the things we make, a lot of times early and ad-free. Always, always ad-free.
Absolutely.
A lot of times early, and sometimes with outtakes and fun stuff at the end or at the beginning. Yeah. So patreon.com/truecrimeguys. There are hundreds of audio files waiting for you there. And please check us out on social media. Give us a follow at True Crime Guys. Make sure you subscribe on YouTube, where we post shorts at least 5-6 days a week. Keep you guys up to date on new strange and unexplained episodes wherever you listen to podcasts. And check out our merch and check out everything else at truecrimeguys.com. All right.
I think you nailed it.
Did I nail it?
Just one and done right there.
I think that's good. This is no cuts. Let's cut it.
It's good. Finally.
All right, guys. We'll see you next week for a new True Crime Guys case.
I think so.
Sound good?
Yeah.
Are you going to show up, Andy? You're not going to Florida?
No, hell no.
Okay. All right, guys. Well, until then, just keep on creeping.
Bye.